Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. It's that time of year when gardeners are enjoying the fruits and vegetables of their labor. But the recent cool weather is a reminder that fall isn't too far away. Joining us now to answer your lawn and garden questions is Dave Graper. He's professor of horticulture at SDSU and the former director of McCrory Gardens. And Dave, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And if you have any questions, you can email them to midday@sdpb.org. And Dave, have the recent cooler temperatures had much of an impact on gardens at all?
I don't think a whole lot. They've probably slowed down the ripening of some of our fruits and vegetables, you know, especially some of our warm season plants like tomatoes and peppers and cucurbits, the squash and pumpkins and so forth. They like the heat. And normally by this time of year, we're kind of waiting for that heat to break, and it certainly did last week when that cold front came through, but it sounds like more normal temperatures are going to be returning. So I think we probably are just going to have a little bit of a setback here, and then things will be getting back to normal. But you're absolutely right. It's giving us an indication that fall isn't too far behind. Typically, usually about the middle of September or so is when we see that first frost occurring, and so that's only just a few weeks away.
Well, I'd like to get to some of the questions that have come in. This one is about peonies. Need to transplant 3 mature peonies, peony bushes. Will this work, and when is the best time?
Well, we're actually coming up on the best time to do that. September typically is when we ideally would be transplanting the peonies. A couple things to keep in mind. Number one, they're big plants, and they have very large roots. Those roots can be 2 or 3 inches in diameter, which is amazingly large for just about any kind of perennial plant. Those roots are also quite brittle, and they also can be extending out some distance from the plant. So get a sturdy shovel. Start digging, you know, several inches away from where you see those stems going into the ground, and try to do it after maybe we've had a rain or that soil is a bit moist. Try to dig as carefully as you can and get as much of that root system as you can out of the ground. Then you can divide those clumps into some smaller segments. And at this time of year, you'll be able to see the buds up near the soil surface, probably about an inch or inch and a half below the soil surface, is where those buds will be. You want to be particularly careful of those, because those are going to be the shoots for next year. So be careful not to break those off. Each division should probably have 2 or 3 of those buds. Replant them in their new location with those buds at about the same depth in the soil as they were when you dug them out. If you end up cutting off the stems or breaking the stems in the process that were there this year, that's not a big concern, because those are going to be getting hit with the first freezing temperatures that we have anyway. Water them in thoroughly, and you should be able to transplant them without a whole lot of difficulty other than just dealing with those big roots.
Here's a question from Sioux Falls. Is there a variety or color of morning glory that is more attractive to hummingbirds, that maybe produces more nectar?
There are some pink and more reddish varieties. From my perspective, I really like the sky blue colored ones, but there's also purple and some multicolored ones. I don't know that there's a whole lot of difference from one color to another for hummingbirds. Typically, we think of red when it comes to hummingbirds, but I don't know if there's a difference in quantity of nectar or anything like that. I just don't know enough about that.
Here's a question about plum trees. This is the first year of full bearing, but got very few good plums because most had tiny punctures near the stem, half rotten plums. Wondering how to prevent that.
Well, the punctures could be from birds. They will feed on plums, and that will end up causing the plums to rot, usually because you're going to get some other pathogens in there, especially during wet weather. We can also have damage from an insect called the plum curculio, but usually with that you will find a little tiny worm inside the plum, and damage where that insect has been feeding around inside there. So without knowing for sure which one of those two issues we're dealing with, those are probably the two most likely problems. Netting can be used to try to keep the birds away, but they can be very persistent and get underneath the netting, and you will sometimes get birds that get caught in the netting, so you have to be ready to deal with that, so check it frequently so that you don't have birds that are dying because they're getting stuck in the netting and having a slow, painful death that way. For the insects, using an orchard spray that's labeled for use on plums is going to give you the best defense there to try to deal with the plum curculio and other insects that might also attack the plums.
Here's another question from Sioux Falls. This one is about crabgrass. Anything I can do now to rid crabgrass of my lawn?
Not a whole lot. The biggest thing or best thing that you can do is if you have a bagger attachment or a lawn sweeper after you mow the lawn, to get those clippings collected along with the seed heads from the crabgrass, which are those fingery-like projections that are coming off of the crabgrass plants. The main thing that you need to do is next spring, we usually say when the lilacs are blooming or the forsythia is blooming, those are kind of biological indicators that the soil temperature has gotten warm enough that crabgrass seed is going to start germinating. Use a crabgrass preventer, usually found in some of the weed and feed fertilizers that are available, or contact a local commercial turf care specialist that can put on a separate crabgrass preventer spray on your lawn or a granular product to keep those crabgrass seeds from germinating next spring. But once they get big and they start spreading out along the ground, there's not much you can really do. Early on, if they're just little seedlings, there are also products that can be used then, but this time of year, it's too late to do anything.
Does it help to overseed the lawn to crowd out the crabgrass? Is that something that works?
You bring up a good point. Crabgrass is more of a problem in a thin or weak lawn, or a lawn that's being mowed too short, or the one that hasn't had much fertilizer on it. So fertilizing the lawn this fall can help to make the lawn more vigorous and therefore more competitive with things like crabgrass. And if it is thin, if you don't have a lot of grass plants there, that crabgrasses will tend to fill in those bare areas. So overseeding might be an option, but that's kind of hard to do if you get a real thick mass of crabgrass in there. And the other comment I'll make is, as we talk about that, is if you wait until spring and you put down that crabgrass preventer and you think, okay, now I'm going to go in and reseed or overseed, that's not going to work because the crabgrass preventer products will also prevent your grass seed from germinating as well. So this fall would be a good time to maybe try to do that, but if you've got a solid mass of crabgrass plants there, that's going to be kind of tough. After we have the first freeze or frost, that's probably going to take out the crabgrass, and that can still be time to do some grass seeding, but right now is actually the best time to sow grass seed, about August 15th to September 15th.
Here's a question about potatoes. My Yukon Gold potatoes have produced many seed balls. Why do they do that? Does it affect the potato yield, and are they useful for any purpose?
Well, I don't think they're really useful for any purpose. There was a couple of varieties that were grown, potatoes that you could actually grow from seed, that you could buy the seed and plant the seed like you would tomatoes or peppers. But generally, those seed balls or tomato or potato fruit just are going to show up every once in a while. Some varieties might be more prone to produce them than others. They're more of a curiosity than anything else. They're not edible, so don't try to cook them up or eat them like you would a tomato. Just kind of a curiosity thing that you might see once in a while.
Does it affect the yield of potatoes?
It shouldn't. Usually you're not going to have a bumper crop of those on the plant. If you want to pick them off, go ahead. But by this time of year, it probably isn't going to make a whole lot of difference.
Here's a question about bulbs in perennial gardens. I'm planning to install a couple of new bulb perennial gardens in my front yard. I have iris, also some daylilies. Do you have any ideas about other bulbs and perennials that would do well in a sunny place with a western exposure?
Well, if you're looking for some of the spring flowering bulbs, certainly you've got lots of options there. People think of tulips and narcissus or daffodils. Those are certainly great options. But mixing in some of those spring flowering bulbs that come up and bloom early in the season and then kind of die down again are great companion plants with some of those later blooming perennials, and even with the later blooming bulbous type plants. We don't usually think of maybe daylilies as having a bulb per se, but tulips and narcissus, that foliage and the flowers comes up early in the season, then it dies down. So mixing those in with other plants that are going to fill in those gaps in between can be a nice way to mix those together and give you a longer season of interest in the garden. If you just plant tulips or just plant narcissus or some of the other spring flowering bulbs, once those are done blooming and that foliage dies down, you've got bare soil there. So So mixing in other perennials is a nice way to kind of blend them together. Think about some of the alliums. I think those are a really wonderful plant that people probably aren't utilizing as much as they could. Camasia is another one to think about. Some of the fritillarias are another great group of plants that people don't use a lot in this area. Those are just a few examples of some of the other ones that people should try.
Well, we're out of time. So, Dave, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday and for answering some listener questions.
You're very welcome.